the Rock Fight, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head. I'm Colin True, and joining me today, he just got fired for betting millions of dollars on someone else's podcast. It's Shohei Ohtani!
You know, maybe it is time to crack a beer, even though it's Friday morning.
Wait, Justin, what are you doing here? Shohei Ohtani's supposed to be here.
Yeah, he's a little tied up. Literally by some bookies enforcers somewhere.
Some guy's breaking his thumbs.
I was so excited for baseball season. I was so excited.
I'm excited to have a scandal. We haven't had a good scandal in a while.
Don't you think there's something fishy about it being like, oh, it just happened to be dropping. Not on opening day generally, but on the Dodgers opening day. You don't think that's like, come on.
Oh, you're saying that it's like a conspiracy because of the...
What are the odds of that? I don't know. It's just like... It's a little too, I mean, there's 365 days in a year. You couldn't have picked one of the other 364 to have this news drop on opening day.
As someone who used to be very passionate about the New England Patriots, that's how we all felt in 2007 with Spygate. So I understand how you feel.
You guys cost the Rams a Super Bowl. You spied on the Rams in night, whatever, with the Vinatieri kick. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Stop.
Not that one. The more recent one in 2018 or 2019.
They didn't spy on them then.
Or then maybe it was the Kurt Warner years. Either way, there's two times the Patriots beat the Rams in the Super Bowl. Yeah, no, that's like known now. It's like totally known that they were like filming the practices.
They were doing what everyone else was doing.
Yeah, but they were doing it worse.
I sent you that my team cheats link, didn't I? About like all the times like your football team cheats.
Yeah, but the Rams were like way low on it. Remember?
You had like the most like, you know, like a Catholic school boy, you
Idiots.
Know. Good boys. They don't cheat. Everybody else has got like 82 infractions.
Aaron Donald gone. They're going to have to start cheating.
Well, we're recording this on Friday, March 22nd. You're hearing it on Monday, March 25th, which means that in between we had ourselves a weekend, which means it's also time for America's favorite podcast segment, What is Justin Doing This Weekend? Presented by Long Weekend Coffee. So, Justin, what did you do this past weekend?
Oh, it's Monday now. Man, it was so rad. So on Saturday.
Start making it up.
Yeah.
Saw your bookie down in San Diego.
Gosh, Colin, this weekend.
What are you doing this weekend? What's
this
the plan?
This weekend. I should come up with a plan. Even though we do this podcast every week, I never come up with a plan beforehand. And I'm struggling to
raining?
Think of one now. It is going to rain. Yeah. It's girls' night tomorrow night. My wife has taken our two little girls out. So, you know what? I don't know. Probably rain. You know, I haven't done a long time is just have like a full on rainy surf day. That was probably what I'll do.
Oh, there you go.
So it's bitching. I love surfing in the rain. That's probably tomorrow's plan.
Is there anything to that when you go on like surf line? It's like, don't go into the water 72 hours.
But only usually at the beginning of the, well, it depends on where you live, but usually we only worry about that at the beginning of the
when it kind of washes everything out.
But that happens. Like I've been really, really sick from that kind of thing. I mean, I've always lived and surfed in kind of more rural areas. And this is more than once at a spot I used to love surfing in Cayucas, near where I grew up, like dead cows floating.
Oh God.
Cause there's like a lot of ag land around there. And so like a cow would get like washed into a creek and drown or I don't know. And like,
I mean, what if it was a dead whale? I mean, I guess like it's a dead animal in the
either
water.
Way,
right?
You're just like, oh shit. Like that, like twice that happened. You see like it sucks. I love cows. You just see like, you'd be like, what is that? And you just see like the belly roll over and like the hooves come on. Like, oh my God. And there's like the smell as it like rotates.
Did you get out of the water?
I don't know. Actually, no, I don't think so. That's happened with a seal around, or a big elephant seal drifted through the water when I was surfing Bolinas nearby, which is already kind of a white shark hangout. So I got out then.
If it's going to be rainy this weekend, you could watch the last episode of The 50. Did you watch that yet?
I haven't watched it yet. No.
I watched it. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I had one criticism though, because they just approach, and then some people like drove up, and then other people were on mountain bikes. He had like a crew for this like last ski, like Michelle Parker,
oh,
and like
cool.
His wife was there and stuff. They should have been on rigid bikes. That's all I gotta say. You know, it was basically fire
you
road.
Know,
it was a little rocky in spots, but man,
we're in the minority.
I know.
We're
like,
the
because the reason I thought is because like they're getting on, they've got all their ski stuff on their backs, so they've got heavy packs on.
Oh, it's gonna suck.
And you immediately see the suspension and be like, and I'm like, oh yeah, you should have just been hauling ass up that road on a steel bike.
So I think it'll go live on Monday, but we did a AJ podcast with Kurt Refsnyder, who's a bikepacking He's a huge name in the bikepacking world, but he helped found Bikepacking Roots, which is a pretty cool site that kind of, it's like an education site. It shows you all these amazing routes that you can do. It has a bunch of like resources you can use to figure out what you need to bring, but also how to, you know, get more involved in the bikepacking community. It's just a great site. He's written some stuff for AJ before about bikepacking, but he only uses full suspension bikes when he goes bikepacking. And part of it is he's sponsored by Pivot, and I don't think Pivot might make a hardtail, but yeah. But he also is just like, you know, for the most part, a lot of the trails I ride are they're like single track hiking trails, and so like you want that. Like he rode the entire Continental Divide Trail, so like
that sounds horrible,
dude. We ended the podcast, and me and Steven are like, we're the softest people in the world. Like 80 days, 3,300 miles. I can't even I'm sure if you added up, actually, that's another thing. We've talked before about how I'd love to see all the food I've ever eaten in one place. I would love to see my lifetime odometer on a bike. As much as I talk about not wanting to track that stuff. My cargo e-bike has an odometer on it, and it's at like 4,400 miles. But I only put 2,000 miles on myself because I bought it with 2,000 miles on it.
All right, well, what is Justin doing this weekend is presented by Long Weekend Coffee. Want to start off your days, your adventures, and all of your weekends the right way? Head over to longweekend.coffee, load up on batches of beans. I recommend the Secret Handshake. That's the one to get. And at checkout, enter promo code ROCK10 to get 10% off of your first order. Long Weekend Coffee. More weekend and coffee, please. I like both of those things.
Before we continue, Colin, I'd like to have a word with the listeners. Just me and them.
Okay.
Okay. I know it sounds like I don't do anything interesting on the weekends, folks. You have to understand. I have a 4.5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and just getting to go for a bike ride in the afternoon feels like I'm Kurt Refsnyder riding the Continental Divide Trail. So. Please don't think that we're not adventurous people just because
this is where backyard trails matter.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Yep.
And also it's, you know, you get the same sort of enjoyment with putting your kid on a bike and riding them around like your lakeside trails as you do going on some crazy multi-day adventure. So please don't hold it against us. That's all. Go back to your, thanks listeners. Go back to your regular show. Yeah.
I will say I'm the little mountain behind my house that I can ride on. And it's, and I often sometimes like discount like that as a ride because it's just like, it's not that extensive, but I can eke out a 6+ mile ride with over 1,000 feet of vert, right? So it's a good hour long ride. Someone's building, I believe, to be a non-sanctioned illegal jump line, and it's kind of great.
Yeah, I don't know.
I kind of like, should I tell like SDMBA about this? Like, because it's like, it's really well done. I mean, you could convince me that it is sanctioned because of how well made, like it's a little flow line with like three gap chunks, jumps with chicken runs around the jumps because I'm not going to do that. I'm not an idiot. But it has added so much to kind of the multiple loops that I can do on the mountain, like on the mountain, and it takes me down low enough that then I have to climb back up. It's pretty great.
I don't know. I do not know how I feel about unsanctioned. I know how I feel about building trails. I don't like that. I do think that there is a lot of knowledge that needs to go into that. There's a lot of work, like especially like around here, a lot of work that trail advocates do to open existing trails. And the argument will be, you guys don't let us ride trails, so we're going to build them. If you let us ride the trails, we won't build them. But that's kind of like a blackmail thing. I don't like it. And it's also, you know, if I wanted to go build a little trail that connects, like a little connector trail or something like that, it might feel harmless. I don't understand the erosion patterns of these places. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And so that kind of annoys me. I do, like, I don't mind poaching because of where I live, I know for a fact that like there's a million trails that aren't really hiked on and I'm not doing any damage, you know, but like,
right.
I'm a very, you know, I don't know. I feel weird about building trails. It's weird.
All right, well, let's get into some headlines. We had a first one. We had another Everest story. There's been a lot of Everest stories surrounding the base camp rule changes. They're piling up. I saw like 3 or 4 of them this past week. We've touched on it already twice, but there was another one that came out this week on Explorer's Web about a new sign that is welcoming those arriving to Everest Base Camp. Historically, there's the location that welcomes people to base camp is a big boulder that's kind of covered in graffiti, I guess years of graffiti on this boulder.
Graffiti?
Well, yeah, like literally someone wrote like, welcome to Everest Base Camp, okay. Like 5,400 meters. And then I think It didn't say this in the article, but it looked like a thing that if you're there, you maybe sign the rock right?
It's not like you're tagging.
It's still, yeah, no. But okay. it's there's ink all over this boulder.
Yeah. All right.
So in front of that landmark, which does look badass, that landmark, there's now a sign featuring Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay. And of course, everyone's up in arms over this. You know, it's another example of commercialization of Everest. I don't know. I don't know if you're looking at it right now, but I think it's too late, man. We've talked about it. All of these rule changes, it's commercialized. The whole thing is. It's a giant multi-million dollar enterprise. Frankly, the sign looks kind of nice.
There it is. Oh, okay. Here we go. I'm looking at it. People are mad about that?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the article, it's just like it's getting coverage. Maybe it's because the old boulder was cool. The old boulder was cool.
I guess it is the kind of thing where it's like, how wild can it be if there's like a sign like that at the beginning of it, maybe?
But how wild is it when there's massive tents filled with like movie screens and shit?
Rather have that than spray paint on the rocks?
That's kind of how I feel. Like, I get there's pictures of the boulder in that article too. I think that's cool. Like, but I also feel like if you're running, if you're trekking to base camp and this is the high point, that'd be kind of a cooler thing to take your picture in front of.
I was just going
to
say, I think this is cool. I mean, you could stand next to Norgay and Hillary and like pretend like you're with them. I can't imagine getting mad at this.
You just can't win.
And you should look at the sign, but it looks like something you would see in like Nepal. Like, it's not like a super fancy,
right,
neon lit sign. I mean, it looks like it's fitting with the vibe of the place. I think it's fine. What a weird thing to get mad about. Get mad at the poop that you're all.
That's it. Like, everyone and all these other articles.
I can't believe people spray painted on that rock. This is insane. Oddly enough,
mad about the rock.
I'm mad about that. I've never actually seen these. I'm surprised I've never seen these pictures. I mean, obviously I've seen the prayer flags and like the base camp. I've never seen that people were like stenciling and writing. I can't stand that shit. Like, when you're backpacking and you like come into like a grove of aspens and there's like John and Cindy 1975 carved into it. That's the same thing to me as this spray painting on this rock, but it's worse because this is freaking Everest. I can't believe people did that.
See, I don't know. Is it worse? Because the tree could actually die from that. The rock's just a rock.
It's not
and
the
it
point.
Is at a place where it's, a lot of people
I,
have gone
I don't
to.
Wanna, I don't want to see your, that's, I don't want to see your, I don't need to see it. I don't care that you went there. I know I'm at Everest. I hate that. That pisses me off. That's you imposing your own.
Once again,
that's you imposing your own. Justin was here. Like, nobody gives a shit. Like,
you do now. You know that your mark was left.
That sucks. That's an instinct for anybody to have. I mean, the sign is like it's a sign from the community. Great. It's not like I'm going to take it upon myself to everyone's going to love this. I'll just spray paint on this rock forever. I hate that.
I wonder if there's a history of that rock. I mean, it was written the history of that. Who was the first person to do
it?
Like,
look
at it, there's a lot on there.
There's a lot. You can sort of see it. I don't know. I'm not a climber. Maybe it makes all the sense in the world if you're a mountaineer. I can't imagine that it would. But I mean, if I were to go to Everest Base Camp and see that, like this, that would piss me off. Really,
I think this just goes
off
with all the other stories, right? Because it's like you said, it's I agree with you that it shouldn't exist, that people shouldn't be defacing anything in the backcountry.
Yeah. However, why is that different than if you go to a place you like to go backpacking and there's like a boulder that you've always seen and all of a sudden it's covered in like all this crap?
I agree with you. I guess if you, in context though, with what's happening at Everest Base Camp and all of these articles about all of these changes, which are all, people are trying to do the right thing, which finally, right? But it kind of lines up, right? We've taken this place and kind of desecrated it in the name of climbing this mountain. Yeah. It kind of just sort of fits in, I feel like, with the motif, I guess, in a way.
Which is sad. You're not wrong. Yeah. It's sad. That annoys me. I don't care about the sign. Sign's fine. Good. You could take it out if you get mad. It's just hammered into the ground. Take it out. No big deal.
Right.
People.
Well, let's keep this train rolling. We got the next story, which is per Yahoo.com, which Yahoo.com apparently still a thing.
Still exists.
Yeah, three disgruntled visitors are suing the National Park Service over its policy to only accept card payments for entrance to some of its sites. You've heard of this? Did you hear this one?
No.
The three plaintiffs claim the NP...
Sue them. They're suing.
They're suing.
Well, I get that's because they want to change the policy. It's not because they want money. Okay, go ahead.
The three plaintiffs claim the NPS's cashless policy is unreasonable and goes against federal laws, stating that legal tender is suitable for, quote, all public charges. They filed the lawsuit earlier this month with the District Court of Columbia after being told on separate occasions that banknotes wouldn't be accepted for entry. One was denied entrance to the FDR home at Roosevelt Vanderbilt National Historic Site when she tried to pay with a $10 bill. Another emailed Saguaro National Park to ask if she could pay with cash and was told, "We do not have the capability to accept cash. On your way to Arizona, you might be able to stop at a park that does accept cash and purchase an interagency annual pass." Meanwhile, the third was told by Fort Pulaski to go to the local grocery stores or big chains like Walmart to purchase a gift card. We can accept them in lieu of cash. I mean, I agree in principle here, but I never have cash, especially when I'm taking trips and stuff like that. It just, you know, does, I don't know. It seems a little odd, though, that a government-funded enterprise would not take cash. That does seem a little weird, I guess.
Why do you think it's a COVID thing? Remember when places didn't want to touch money? Or do you think it's just because they don't want to? I mean, it costs like labor hours to collect the cash, to count it, to take it to the bank.
Sure. It's definitely more intensive. It's more risky. I mean, you think about the lines of cars getting into some of these places and the amount of cash they would have to handle. These are park rangers, typically, I imagine, sitting in booths or not like, you know, the Brinks truck to come in and get all the money. The coffee shop I go to now, like, will not accept cash. Like, there's really? Just, like, there's more of that going on now.
The thing that's a bummer, the only downside, I guess, is it's like anything else with a cashless thing. It puts the onus on people who least can deal with it. Right. Like if you don't have a credit card for some reason.
Yeah.
Or a debit card. Like
let's ask this question. How could you travel to any of these places without a debit or credit card?
I don't know. I mean,
that sounds like unbelievably difficult to be a cash only traveler.
I don't know. I mean, debit cards are free, so I don't know. I don't know. But it's a tiny part of the population, I'm sure. But I don't know. I mean, if you're homeless or you just don't have a bank account for one reason or another, should you not be able to go to the national parks? No. And should you have to go to a store to buy a gift card? I mean, that sucks too. I tend to get it in that situation. I would imagine that that's what you, I doubt that there's someone who's like, I can make money from this and they're suing for $1 million. I imagine the whole point is like, this isn't okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, I don't think that the Rangers should be in the position to have to deal with that, I guess. But they've done it for decades and it seemed fine. I mean, have you ever heard of a story of like the Yosemite toll booth getting like...
That's Ocean's 15. All right, we're going to take down the national parks.
I mean, because even if you said, okay, we'll take cash. Cool. What, like one person's going to use it. So you're going to have at most like $10 in your till at the end of the day. I don't know. I guess I have to agree with them, frankly. Like, I mean, money is, that's what it's, you kind of have to take it, right? It's legal tender. You're at a national park. I mean, it's one thing, you can get into an argument with your coffee shop about it, but like, you're at a national park. You're at a federally owned place. Like,
it's a federal dollars. Federal funded thing. Yeah. That to me is the best argument here because otherwise, like, just put it on the website. We don't take cash anymore.
Be behind somebody with a, what, you know, say, what does it cost to get into Yosemite? $20? I don't remember. You know, like, I'd way rather have someone just hand them a 20 and drive through than like have to deal with like the scanning of the
100%.
Card. I mean, it takes longer.
How are you feeling on cash these days, though? Are you a cash guy?
I never have cash. I mean, ever. No. Like, the only time I use cash at all is at this little, there's a little ice cream shop in town, and it's phenomenally great, but they only take cash. But even then, to get it, it's like, well, shit, now I got to go to a bank and pay $4 to get cash. You know, like, especially now that you can tap everywhere, or like, I use my phone.
So great.
So it's like, I don't bring my wallet most of the time, because I don't, why, you know? Can you write a check?
That's a good question.
I'll bet you could write a check. That's okay. There needs to be a bigger discussion about this with like going camping. So when I go camping every summer, I usually go dispersed camping, but not always. And so one of my favorite campgrounds is Tioga Lake Campground, just outside the park, the park's eastern border in Yosemite, right kind of before you start going down to Lee Vining. That's kind of the only campground I'll pay for typically. In the summer, because I'm usually dispersed camping, but that's a classic old school campground where there is a host, but mostly you just put there's an Iron Ranger, and you don't have to use cash, you can use a check, but it's like I've been places before where like Europeans will come up to me and they'll be like, how do I pay, and they'll have like they're expecting to be able to use a credit card somehow, and we're like out in the middle of nowhere, there's no cell service, but there's a campground with an Iron Ranger, and you're like, well, you have to put cash or a check in there, and they're like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm 200 miles from a town, you know, like, right, we need to figure that out. Generally speaking, I don't know how, but
I think I've said we need to decide if we're going to use cash anymore. Right. Cause that's what I mean. In principle, these people aren't wrong. You know, like they, you know, especially with a national park, you should be able to like take a whip out, yeah. you know, a few bucks and be able to get in.
Like, I don't want to use cash everywhere, but I'm not, you know, like if you're just like a stickler, you're like, I only use cash. God damn it. I get that.
You should be able to. It's legal tender. Yeah. Legal's in the words, right?
Nobody's tracking you. I mean, there's lots of reasons. I'm not like a I don't really care about like data and tracking. Like, whatever, fine. It's too late now. Yeah. But like, there's perfectly good reasons to be like, I don't want the government knowing where I'm going all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I get that. I'm actually talking myself into only using cash. I might go to the bank after this and just get like a grand of cash and just kind of.
I love not having it, but then when I do have it, I'm stoked that I have it.
Well, because it doesn't feel like real money. You're like, because like it's out of my bank account. Like, I look at my bank account five times a day or whatever. You know,
right? Sure,
I'm weird, but like, if I had like a couple hundred bucks in cash in my wallet, that's Monopoly money. Are you kidding me? Like, it's not in my bank account, so it doesn't exist. Anyway, I got to go get some cash.
Yeah. All right. Well, the next story we got to talk about, because I'm very excited. As we're recording this, the Barkley Marathons is still happening.
We did talk about that.
The Barkley is the notoriously difficult ultramarathon in Tennessee's Frozen Head State Park that was inspired by a prison escape attempt by James Earl Ray, who only made it 12 miles.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that. I've written about that was this
the
before.
Guy, so the guy who founded the race read the story about James Earl Ray. He only made it 12 miles away from the prison. Martin Luther King.
That's right.
So Keith Dunn is, I'm not sure exactly who Keith is, but he famously covers the race on Twitter. And for those of us who aren't down with Elon, ultra runner Amelia Boone has been reposting Keith's tweets on Threads. And as we're recording this, there are still 7 runners on the course and we're 3 days in, I believe. That's incredibly impressive. It's getting, the numbers are getting higher as the years go on, but there's only been 7 to date. There's only been 17 runners to ever finish the event since the race was extended to 100 miles in 1989. And I love the Barkley for exactly just what it is. You know, most endurance events are kind of physically attainable, more so than people think, but it's kind of in your own head, you know, whether or not you can finish. I mean, even like a 5K for some people would be like, that's a huge distance. But the Barkley is designed to destroy you. Like, I just love that it exists. Like, and it's sort of, you should go for it world. I like that there's something that basically says, yeah, maybe you shouldn't do this.
Can you, talk about what it is. I mean, a lot of people aren't going to know what it is. Tell the folks.
So the thing about the Barkley, so it started this guy, Lazarus Lake, who, I forget exactly how he came up with it, but he was inspired by the story of James Earl Ray, and he came up with the idea of like putting on this race and like, how far can you get? And how the race format goes, number one, to get into it, there's a secret process to get into the race. That I have had friends who have applied who know the secret process, and they still haven't told me how it is.
I do think that it's, I could be wrong, but I think if you're like kind of like a really well-known runner, you can kind of get in.
It's definitely easier. Like, you're also connected. You can kind of get in touch with like what to know, but you have to like submit like a haiku on a certain date of the year to this email address kind of stuff. And then you get into a smaller pool, and then ultimately they select a field.
That's also how you that's also how you successfully pitch Adventure Journal. It's print magazine.
To get in, to send a haiku to you.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's different every time.
So, and then what the race format is, it's 5 loops, and there's orienteering involved because a lot of it goes off trail. Everybody gets assigned a book that you have to collect a page out of a book. They have them stashed around this forest. And the other thing that's cool about it, it's in Tennessee. And the people who go there are UTMB finishers and Hard Rock finishers and people who've done these incredibly hard ultramarathons. Jared Campbell, I think, has finished the most. And he is a very accomplished athlete, ultramarathoner. Jameel Curry, who's a Solomon guy, runs Arevipa? I forget his name of his race company. But he's a very famous kind of ultra runner and sponsored Solomon guy. He has never finished. There's a great movie that the Ginger Runner did about Gary Robbins attempting 3 years in a row and not finishing. And it is brutal. And it's all off trail. And it's like thousands of feet of climbing.
And you have to like find books or something to tell you where the next...
Yeah, they hide these books. Yeah. And you have to orienteer to a book and rip a page off. And then when you get back to camp... Laz goes through and makes sure that you have all 5 pages from your book, and then you get to go out for another round, and you have to complete 5 of these rounds in order to finish. If you finish 3 legs of it, it's called a fun run.
That's right.
The best part, too, how it starts, so that the start changes every year, and they don't know when it's going to be. What happens is at some point during the kind of lead up to the day it's going to run, Lyles will come out and blow a conch shell. And that signals that the race is going to start in an hour.
Okay, that's right.
And then everybody lines up, and it doesn't start until he then lights a cigarette.
Yeah, so rad.
And if you tap out, they have someone with a bugle who plays taps for you.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool. There should be more things like this. Not necessarily this totally. Hard, but...
But if you listen, there are people... Like, if you go through like right now and look at the reporting that Keith's done or that Amelia's reposted, and it's... I mean, like, people don't make it, like, 6 hours sometimes. They'll get out there. They'll be halfway through the first lap and be like, fuck this. And just tap out. You're like, it is brutal.
That would
so
be
I love
so
what it is.
Organize.
I have never been tempted at all. Even when I was running a lot. I'm like, this sounds miserable.
This is not for me. This is the kind
of
thing where people would be like, what would you do? Like, I would... for some reason, I have this conversation the other day about like if you were super rich and didn't need to work, you're like, I'd run out of things to do or I'd be bored. But it's like, no, you organize,
no, you
like, how fun would it be to organize something like this? I mean, I live in a perfect spot for this where it's mostly open space and like there's trails everywhere, you know? So it's like you could go crazy with like a kind of weird scavenger hunt ish / orienteering race. It'd be so much fun.
There's a, if you're
That'd be
interested
more fun
at all,
than running it.
Yeah. I'd go out for like a few miles just to follow someone who knows it and be like, just to get a sense of the terrain and be like, oh, okay, I see that. I'm good. I'm going to go home now. But if you're listening to this and you're not familiar with it and it's at all interesting to you, there's a Netflix documentary called The Barkley Marathons, The Race That Eats Its Young. And it's,
it
gets a whole kind of background. It's a great doc or go online on YouTube and watch Ethan Newberry's, Gary Robbins doc. But anyway, yeah. Do you know much about the Barkley?
I've written a few online articles about it when I first discovered it, you know, and, just kind of talked about the weirdness of it. But
the funny thing, when I was tech repping, like 2006 or seven, there was an account in Knoxville that I worked with a lot. And so he knew about this, but then it's just like, it was kind of, it wasn't as well known.
Yeah.
And so I remember him describing like Laz coming out and lighting the cigarette and everything. And I'm like, are you making this up? This
doesn't sound
like it. And now it's gotten a lot more notoriety.
Well, also
so it's
Laz
like,
is
shit.
Like this. He looks like a hobbit, right? Like a giant white beard.
Yeah.
At least the pictures I've seen.
No, and he smokes, and you also have to send him a license plate from where you're from, and they hang all the license plates at the start, and you know, it's cool because like there's international runners, and they've got like all such a badass event. So, we'll see. Seven runners on the course as of this morning on Friday. So I guess we'll see who finishes or if they finish.
It's funny because it's so close to being like a Hunger Games type thing when you think about it. Like if you're kind of picturing like a big like board, like little digital little dots, blink, blink, blink. Okay, they're still on the course. I mean, that's not how it works, but it's easy to imagine that.
Even when I was flirting with doing a 100-mile ultramarathon, which I never ended up doing, it's still like it's straightforward, and you're looking at the course and you understand the elevation profile. Oh, here's where the aid stations are, and all these things. And this, I mean, I never liked kind of like multiple lap races because I knew if I got back to where my car was, I'd be like, all right, I'm done.
I'm not going back. That's like how mules are. It's like you can't let them see the barn or whatever because they'll just go right back to it.
I'll take that. I'm a mule. I just like, oh, I could just be done. I can just like sit down and not have to go back out. Like, yeah, that sounds great. That's what I'm doing. So, all right. Well, lastly today, we want to pour a little out for mountaineer and filmmaker David Brashears, who died this past week at 68, reportedly of natural causes. Brashears had summited Everest 5 times, but was most famous for producing the Everest IMAX film that came out in 1998. Pretty much a legend, especially kind of coming out of the late 90s, you know, alpine climbing boom that we all went through.
It's funny, like looking at pictures of him. Mm-hmm. It's like, gosh, like, was he talking head in his stuff? Because he's really familiar looking.
Yeah, he definitely was a presence. Like, he coming out of, like, you know, the Conrad Anker, Ed Veister's kind of world. Like, you know, he was a filmmaker, but he was still legit. I mean, they hauled an IMAX camera to the summit of
Everest.
Pretty
amazing.
You know, that's not,
yeah. I must have seen, it's an IMAX movie. I must have seen it in IMAX. I just don't. That came out a long time ago. When did that come out?
That was a 98. Full-on phenomenon when that came out. It was, like, one of the highest grossing movies ever.
It might have been, like, one of the... When did IMAX start?
Oh, 1970 IMAX.
No.
Yeah, it's when it was in, that was when it, the inception.
Wild. So the famous Into Thin Air, like, disaster, they were there for that, right?
Yeah, that gets covered in the IMAX movie.
Oh, God, maybe I haven't seen it then. Because I don't think that, like, that's not, like, the people that died and that were involved. I don't think they had nothing to do with it, but I think the film crew was there too, right? Like,
yeah, they were filming. It was the same season. They were part of it. Ed Visser's actually helped a bit during like bringing people down and stuff like that. And they had a moment when kind of after that all went where they got another weather window. And they're all sort of like taking inventory of where they were and then decided, should we go for it? And then they made it to the summit after that.
Well, yeah, pour one out, bud.
All right, man, we'll wrap it up there. So for anybody listening, we do have a new episode of Gear and Beer that came out this past Friday. We talked about... no, we didn't.
No.
I just teased.
Oh. Oh. No, we talked about...
I'll bleep that.
We talked about boots.
We talked about boots.
Boots and beers.
I'm a week ahead. I'm teasing a week ahead.
Boots and beers. Which Boots would also be a good. I would go to that store, wouldn't you?
Hell yeah! Like a cobbler to come out and make dope boots for you while you get to drink beer.
Or even if they're not making them, you're just trying them on, drinking beer. I mean, you'll hear about this next week on next week's Gear and Beer. But we did a little dissecting of what hipsters have gotten right during that recording. Well, it turns out like whiskey and beer at where you're getting your haircut, pretty damn sweet.
That was smart. That was a good call.
That's nice. You know, and I think maybe that's the kind of thing that like super rich people have always enjoyed when they go to like a tailor. Here's a glass of wine or champagne while you have like your $5,000 suit made or while you're fitted for it or whatever. But like, yeah, I'm going to go and pay $70 to the barber. It's nice to have a beer or like a whiskey while you wait. Just in the chair.
All right, man. Well, anything Tisa and the AJ world? You say you get the podcast coming out Monday.
Podcast
it's out
comes
today
because
it's
Kurt.
Out. This is out on Monday.
It's out today. Check that out. If you're a subscriber, you should be looking to check your mail.
I got mine.
Did you? There you go.
Yeah.
There
it's
you
beautiful.
Go. It looks great.
It's beautiful. Looks wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the Rock Fight's a production of Rock Fight LLC. For Justin Hausman, I'm Colin True. Thanks for listening. Here to take us out, he's taking a break from a wild game of pickleball to sing us this song. It's Krista Makes with the Rock Fight Song. We'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Rock Fight.